B. Collins.
Peter B. Collins, news and comment. It's Monday, February 5th, 2018. And it is time to abolish the secret FISA court. Now, the Nuno's memo came out on Friday, and we're already over it. I didn't see any sensitive national security information that was divulged in there. And so a lot of the pushback that came from the Democrats and the media as they sided with the FBI and the spook community in general, trying to keep this memo suppressed. Well, to me, the biggest takeaway is that the FISA court is hopelessly corrupted. And because of the way it operates in secret, on a one-sided basis, granting something like 99.9% of the warrant requests that are presented, the FISA court has to go. And of course, we've seen that selectively political leaders are attacking the FISA court if they're Republicans aligned with Trump, or essentially defending it if they're in any other camp. And over the weekend, I had an opportunity that apparently has evaporated since to read a 99-page court ruling from the super-secret FISA court. And I was hoping to link to the document and be able to share it with my listeners today. But when I went back to the online source, the link to it had been removed. And I hope that in the next few days I'll be able to find another link or a way to access this document. It was up on Scribd, if you know that document hosting website. But the link is now unavailable. And what I read was a 99-page document signed by the current presiding judge of the FISA court. Her name is Rosemary Collier. It was dated April of 2017, and it was partly redacted. Now, I've seen references to this memo from the Wall Street Journal and other media outlets where they say that this memo deals with the Carter Page authorizations for surveillance. Now, the document I read, as I mentioned, was partly redacted, not so heavily. I've read stuff where, you know, every other word or, you know, massive sections are blocked out. But I didn't see anything that referred to Carter Page in this document. What it mostly relates to is how the Obama administration, in its final months, eased the restrictions on the sharing of raw intelligence gathered under the FISA Section 702. This is called upstream. This is intelligence that is accessed through networks, through Google, Facebook, and other online presences. And the way it works, the raw intelligence is supposed to be reviewed and then minimized to protect U.S. persons and innocent bystanders. And the document goes into great detail regarding how what's called about surveillance has been discontinued. And it appears this is a privacy gain for you and me that was promoted by the Trump administration, probably for the wrong reasons, probably out of only self-interest. But it does appear that the last-minute relaxation of the rules by Obama has been tightened up once again. What I saw was language relating to permits for the National Counterterrorism Center to access the intercepts after they have been minimized. But what really is damaging in this document are two things. It details the long history of violations of the rules of minimization and many other practices that are governed by the FISA court rulings that have granted these warrants in the past with rules and restrictions. And there is a long history of the Department of Justice, the FBI, the NSA, and the CIA of misleading the FISA court. And I mentioned this in my comments on Friday, and I cited the case of Judge Reggie Walton, a big friend of the Spook community, who was the presiding judge of the FISA court for several years. And in a document released in 2013 but dated 2011, he rails at the way he was misled, in that case by the NSA. So this duplicity, this abuse of the FISA court, manipulation of these judges, is a very serious issue that can only be corrected by killing the FISA court outright. I don't believe that there are modifications that would balance it, that would present another perspective. I think it's time for us to face up, that we've got to end the charade, that we can have an open government with a secret court. And that brings me to my second key takeaway point. Judge Collier writes in detail about all of the previous violations. In legalese, she says, I'm going to be keeping an eye on you, and you have to report to me on a regular basis. She outlines how, in some cases, government agencies waited 2 years to report violations, saying, oh, we were working on fixing them. And in the end, she says, nevertheless, I approve of all of the applications that you have put before me in this specific time frame. And that presumably includes the reauthorization of the coverage of Carter Page. And so we've got this judge who, in 97 pages, goes through all this stuff about why the system doesn't work, and then she fucking rubber stamps another period of time where they can continue this unconstitutional system of surveillance. Sorry. I do get worked up about these things. And Greenwald at The Intercept does a good job. He paired up the issues related to the selective outrage over the FISA court with an unrelated matter of Katie Roif and the media list of shitheads related to the Me Too movement. And I didn't find that particularly compelling. But when he dives into the issue of the Nunes memo, the FISA court, the reaction to it, he says, people like Nunes and House Speaker Paul Ryan have spent the last week prancing around as fierce opponents of surveillance abuses and opaque warrant procedures. But these are the very same people who have spent the last decade empowering, cheering, and enabling exactly these same abuses when they have been directed at Muslim Americans. These Republican authoritarians only care now because the supposed victim is someone who is like them, someone with whom they identify. Indeed, civil libertarians have spent the last two decades vehemently objecting that the FISA court is a joke, that it rubber stamps anything the DOJ and FBI want, and that Section 702 of the FISA amendments allow massive warrantless eavesdropping on Americans. Back in 2014, The Intercept, using Snowden documents, revealed the names of five prominent Muslim Americans who had been targeted by the NSA and/or FBI for invasive surveillance for reasons that were almost certainly political. Not only did people like Devin Nunes and Paul Ryan never care about any of those abuses, far worse, they actively supported and empowered those abuses. Nunes and Ryan joined Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, ranking Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee Adam Schiff, to increase the domestic spying powers of the Trump FBI and NSA while blocking all reforms and safeguards. These charlatans are more than happy for these abuses to occur as long as those subjected to them are Muslim Americans or people who, for whatever reason, are powerless in Washington. And Justin Amash, Tea Party Republican from Michigan, he and I don't agree on much except the Fourth Amendment. And he tweeted on Friday, just 3 weeks ago, Nunes, Ryan, and Schiff, Owen Pelosi, teamed up to push a reauthorization of the FISA over my and others' objections. The speaker gave a dramatic floor speech about the importance of giving the FBI power to violate everyone's civil liberties. Back to Greenwald. In his voice, he says this is one of the most toxic pathologies of America's ruling class. They are utterly indifferent to the suffering and victimization of the rights and civil liberties of people who are unlike them and distant from them. But as soon as far more benign erosions affect them and those like them, they become shrilly and selfishly outraged. One more quote. It's why Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein spent decades as one of the most devoted CIA and NSA loyalists until she learned she had been spied on by the CIA during her torture investigation, and then she suddenly discovered the need for safeguards and privacy protections. And you may know, I have tried for years to get Dianne Feinstein to acknowledge what Russell Tice, the NSA whistleblower, told me, that she was wiretapped by the NSA. And meanwhile, a lot of people are outraged at the Larry Nassar case. More than 265 accusers and counting. The New York Times reported, not this specifically, but this is my lift from their front page story on Sunday. At least 40 girls and women say Dr. Nassar molested them between July 2015 when he first fell under FBI scrutiny, and September 2016, when he was exposed by an Indianapolis Star, that's a newspaper, investigation. And it was the Star that prodded the FBI. That had just been dilly-dallying along, and they told the Gymnastics Association to keep quiet, not to talk about it publicly, so they hushed up the victims. And while the FBI was busy investigating Clinton and Trump and framing some number of suspects whom they call domestic terrorism criminals, these women were molested. And I just think it shows that the priorities of the FBI, the rogue agency that I've been critical of for so long, are way out of line. So today, Trump and Schiff started blasting each other on Twitter. And, of course, Trump started it. He first praised Devin Nunes as a man of tremendous courage and grit. And then he went on to try to smear Adam Schiff, who is not a tall man. But who cares? Trump does. He says, little Adam Schiff, who is desperate to run for higher office, is one of the biggest liars and leakers in Washington, right up there with Comey, Warner, Brennan, and Clapper. Adam leaves closed committee hearings to illegally leak confidential information must be stopped. Now, I don't know about that last allegation, but Adam Schiff has been leaking like crazy. And he does it in this studious way that blames the Republican leaks. But both sides have been just pouring it on this year. So Schiff got pretty snarky here, and I like it. Mr. President, I see you've had a busy morning of executive time. Instead of tweeting false smears, the American people would appreciate it if you turned off the TV, referring to his Fox and Friends daily session, and helped solve the funding crisis, protected Dreamers, or really, anything else. So they can go neener-neener and piss all over each other's legs. It doesn't really change much. Schiff today is working with his committee to try to get the Democratic rebuttal memo released. And one of the things that I have pointed out, and I will again, is that none of the coverage that I've seen, and I've read all different perspectives on the Nunes memo released on Friday, nobody mentions the earlier reports that there was a FISA application that was rejected. And we know the one accepted wasn't until late October, which is much different than what we were led to believe during the anonymous leak and evidence-free phase. Oh, I guess we're still there, of this particular saga. So now Devin Nunes is threatening to publish more memos. He said he's in phase two of their investigation of the investigators. And the tease that comes out, again, from a leak from someone close to Nunes, is that the next memo will target Sidney Blumenthal. Now, I've been ranting about him since the Clinton emails, the State Department emails, were first released. And Sid Blumenthal was emailing Hillary almost daily. At the time, he was on the payroll of the Clinton Foundation for $10,000 a month, and he was also using his connections to the Clintons to try to poach business, develop new deals in Libya and other places. As I've mentioned, he helped broker a deal where Joe Wilson, the husband of Valerie Plame, remember her, the CIA agent outed by friends of Dick Cheney back in 2005? I have told you how the emails disclosed that Joe Wilson lobbied Hillary for $60-plus million, and he got it for a client who was building a power plant in Tanzania. It's never been fully explained, and it's one of those issues that I believe deserves investigation, but I don't trust Devin Nunes and the witch hunters at the House Intel to actually conduct an honorable investigation. There's also a detail from the Nunes memo alleging that former FBI Deputy Director Andy McCabe testified in last December that no surveillance warrant would have been sought from the FISA court without the information in Christopher Steele's dossier. And it does appear that the dossier was used at least initially. We're now being told without proof that the FISA court was aware that the dossier was a politically paid piece of information. But that needs to be aired out much more thoroughly. And people are noticing that Jeff Sessions has been mighty quiet, even as Trump continues to attack his Department of Justice and its high-ranking officials. Sessions made a statement, "I have great confidence in the men and women of this department, but no department is perfect." These are bizarre days. And last week I told you that one of my big beefs is about secrecy in general. We declare confidential or top secret so much information that isn't really confidential or top secret. It's just potentially embarrassing if it is revealed. And we have over a million people with security clearances who can read this stuff, traffic in it, and leak it, and often get away with it. And this comes into sharp focus because yesterday's Super Bowl, of course, was the focus of years of security preparation. And it appears that Michael Walter, the program manager for the Department of Homeland Security's BioWatch program, left his boarding pass and a very sensitive secret document about security at the Super Bowl on an airliner. You know, in that pouch where they put the barf bags? And a CNN reporter, or somebody else who gave it to CNN, found these documents. They show that there was concern that the BioWatch program might not actually work in discovering a biological attack on the stadium hosting the Super Bowl in Minneapolis. And this is just another example of how when you're awash in secrets and you have over a million people with access to them, people get sloppy and secrets leak. Some of the people who have been prolific leakers are still not publicly identified. But if I had to pick a suspect number one, it would be John Brennan, former advisor to Obama in the first term, promoted to CIA director in the second term. And now they've cut out the middleman because John Brennan has been hired as a national security analyst by MSDNC. And now he'll get paid to appear on camera and share those secrets and leak against Trump. And Caitlin Johnstone, who's being picked up fairly regularly now by the late Bob Perry's ConsortiumNews.com, notes that Jeremy Bash is already on MSNBC, and she correctly identifies producer at NBC Ken Delanian as a known CIA collaborator. James Clapper is now a paid advisor at CNN, They also hired Michael Hayden, the former CIA and NSA director, and Phil Mudd, a former CIA analyst and now a paid CNN commenter. He's over there too. So the spooks are in the media. The media loves it. They revel in this, and we have lost any firewall between media and the intelligence community. And this is another reason why I say we've got to abolish the FISA court and end most of the secrecy that our government practices. Did you know that it was 15 years ago this week that Colin Powell went over to the United Nations, told a pack of lies, held up a little vial with some white powder and said, you know, this could be a dangerous chemical that could kill us all. And he lied about the mobile weapon labs that had been tortured out of a source whose name was Curveball. And Lawrence Wilkerson, who has largely redeemed himself from enabling Colin Powell, he was the chief of staff to the Secretary of State, he issued an almost complete apology in the New York Times today, coupled with a warning that he sees this happening again vis-a-vis Iran. And when he sees Nikki Haley, the current UN ambassador, demonizing Iran, showing satellite images and other physical evidence only available to the intelligence community, he warns that this could be Groundhog Day, and we might wind up in a war with Iran based on a pack of lies. Every day I like to pause for a second and thank the people who support my work here at the Peter B. Collins Podcast with your subscriptions. And by the way, have you dropped into YouTube, put Peter B. Collins in the search window, then gone to the homepage of my podcast series there and clicked on the subscribe button? It only takes a minute. It doesn't cost you anything. But if we can beef up our subscribers there, I'll be able to generate a little bit of revenue from YouTube. But I'm very grateful to people including Sandra Fish, Anna Gordon-Near, Mona Kobus, and Linear Bob. Bob Getzla has just renewed his annual subscription again. He's a repeat offender. Thank you, Bob. And thank you all. If you want to become a subscriber, it's easy. Visit peterbcollins.com. There's a menu tab. You pull it down, click on Become a Subscriber, and in minutes, you can be good to go, and you can help me continue this work. Over the weekend, we learned that for at least 2 years, Egypt has given approval to Israel to bomb areas in the Sinai. That, of course, is outside of Israel and inside of Egypt. And this shows deeper cooperation between Israel and many of its neighbors who are run by military dictators. It also points up the very sharp relief, the animus against Iran that is shared by many Middle Eastern companies. And seizing on a really far-fetched pretext, Israel has announced that it is legalizing an illegal settlement that is way deep in the West Bank. And it's because the Rabbi Raziel Shiva was fatally shot from a passing vehicle last month as he drove near his home in the unauthorized settlement outpost near the Palestinian city of Nablus. And Netanyahu, who doesn't need much to justify his irrational acts, claims that that murder justifies essentially the annexation of this area that is not contiguous to other Israeli settlements or Israel itself. It's blowback time for Obama's miscalculations in Syria. And while Trump is now the president and it is his war, it was Obama who had this incoherent policy that we were going to vanquish the Islamic State and get rid of Bashar al-Assad all in one sweeping move, without putting significant U.S. troops on the ground in Syria. Now, I'm glad he didn't invade. No question about that. But instead, we used a proxy, which is called the Free Syrian Army, trained and assembled by the CIA, funded by your taxpayer dollars. And now, they've gone to the other side, 20,000 strong. They are aligning with Turkey in the war on the Kurds, which will continue to leave the border area between Turkey and Syria as a combat zone for the foreseeable future. And who knows where it will go from there. I wanted to mention that my webmaster sent me an alert, and over the weekend there were 9 different attempts to hack into peterbcollins.com, all with IP addresses that originate in the Russian Federation. Now, as you know, those IP addresses can be dummied, and the attempted attacks on my website may have come from right here in the United States. They were unsuccessful because we've got really good security here, I hope. Meanwhile, South Korea, which is trying to get along with North Korea at least until they can get the Olympic Games out of the way and their kind of forced show of unity, where they will be marching as one country in the parades. Well, Seoul is accusing North Korea of hacking cryptocurrency exchanges, stealing Bitcoin and other digital currency worth millions of dollars. A member of the Parliamentary Intelligence Committee, quoted today by Reuters, North Korea sent emails that could hack into cryptocurrency exchanges and their customers' private information and stole cryptocurrency worth billions of won, the South Korean currency. And South Korea is described as the world's most active, one of the world's most active Bitcoin trading hubs. So we'll see if this turns into any kind of a wider conflict between the two countries. But according to a security firm named Recorded Future, the North Korean hackers known as Lazarus Group have been working on the cryptocurrency exchanges all last year. They also blame North Korea for the WannaCry ransomware attack, and dubiously they claim that Lazarus is responsible for the hacking of Sony Pictures back in 2014. I've never believed that, and we've never seen any solid evidence. Well, Friday was Janet Yellen's last day on the job as chair of the Federal Reserve. And to a point, she lowered the boom on Wells Fargo Bank. Over the years of unethical marketing that they were doing, and their employees were so pressured to produce results that they were creating fake accounts for customers just to meet quotas. Well, the Fed announced that they are cracking down on Wells Fargo. They are forcing the bank informally to replace 4 more members of its 16-member board. The Fed is freezing Wells Fargo's ability to expand its capital base and to write new mortgage loans for some unspecified period of time. Now, this sounds pretty dramatic, and I'm glad that they're taking some action because all the other regulators didn't. But an analyst points out that the chairman of Wells Fargo, CEO, Tim Sloan, did a conference call with investors after this settlement was announced with the Fed, and he estimated that it would cost Wells Fargo about $400 million in 2018. Which represents a mere 2% of its profits from 2017. That's not a serious punishment. Not at all. Over at The Intercept, Lee Fung, a great investigative reporter, dug into the Paradise Papers and has been able to confirm that a $40 million gift to Harvard University from Mrs. Mitch McConnell, better known as Elaine Chao, was funded by the Chow family's business, which is a shipping line called the Foremost Group. And the money was transferred into New York in a murky way. It appears they're trying to cover the tracks, the source of the money. We also learned that Elaine Chow's daddy gave her and Mitch $25 million, that's estimated, as a gift back in 2008. And while Elaine Chao is not listed as an officer or shown to own any of the Foremost Group and its 17 cargo ships registered in the Marshall Islands, she's got daddy's money, and I guess that's what connected her up with Mitch McConnell. And finally today, also at The Intercept, there's a nice memorial to Robert Perry, written by John Schwartz. And he talks about some of the great work of Robert Perry over the years and the ethic, the journalistic ethic that he embraced and that he modeled for many people. And he talks about the great exposés of Bob Perry, Iran-Contra, the October surprise of Reagan, Nixon's treasonous deal to continue the war in Vietnam. But curiously, when it gets to the excellent reporting of Bob Perry in the final year of his life, he writes, "I personally disagree with some, not all, of his recent writing about Syria and potential Donald Trump-Russia collusion. But if you don't familiarize yourself with his writing, you have absolutely no idea what's going on." I find that curious and can't resist pointing it out to you. Thanks for listening to my daily news and comment podcast. It's free, and you're free to share it all over the dang place. And find it on YouTube and click that subscribe thing, will you please?
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.